As we move now to our second Sunday, focusing on that deep, big question in our faith, why does God allow suffering and pain? I wanted to remind us of perhaps of an old Zen tale told many, many years ago. Soyin Shaku is an elder well known in his community. He was walking by a home where there was heard much crying. The master of the house had died. He entered the home and he was invited to sit with the people. And he sat and he cried. The people were curious. "How is it that you cry?" they inquired. "Surely you are beyond such things." Shaku gently responded, "It is this which puts me beyond such things." Last Sunday, we began our conversation of why God allows suffering and pain in our lives and in our world. And we began the conversation starting with our human nature, our very creation, our design, and indeed our evolution as human beings. We found ourselves in Genesis 3 looking at the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. And we started talking about God's love, that profound nature of love that didn't just create us in love and shape us in love, but allowed us to be free in love, allowed us to take free will and control of our lives and live as free human beings, a nature of who we truly are. Indeed, our evolution of free will was really the nature of Genesis 3 that we explored and now is part of our full humanity. God allows us, loves us so much that we might walk our own path, a path that sometimes expresses love or hatred, a path that sometimes expresses kindness or violence. God's love extends beyond our mere creation. God's love extends even giving us free will. And we talked about how so much of the suffering and pain today in the world is indeed as a result of people exercising their free will upon others, upon God's creation. Indeed, it is very complex. And the conversation continued about where really God is then. If God is not this grand puppet master controlling the universe, then where is God? And then we moved into the second text in John 11, that text where we see the death of Lazarus. Jesus comes on the scene after Lazarus has died. The people are weeping. And Jesus' first response is to be deeply moved in spirit. Indeed, we see with the mourners that Jesus joins them, and he weeps with them, he cries with them. And we are reminded that God, indeed, as reflected in Jesus, that God is located right with us, comforting us, weeping with us, holding us in our suffering and in our pain. Indeed, we are not alone, and we have never been alone. In some ways, as we continue to move ahead in our second part of the conversation, it's almost amazing that you have returned this Sunday, because we didn't really end on a good news note, really, did we? Isaiah, I think, offers further depth into this conversation this morning. Because as we read the Isaiah text, we know that in the midst of our suffering and in the midst of our pain, that indeed God is with us. And indeed, as we look ahead, we know that our suffering and our pain is not the last word. And indeed, our suffering and our pain should not become our human preoccupation. The 40th chapter, as Deborah was mentioning, it's often called one of the four servant songs by scholars. It's words of hope, words of comfort to the Israelites who were living in slavery. They couldn't see it. They couldn't see it because they were there in Babylon in chains. They were there living in Babylon as their slaves. It'd been so long that it seemed like it was all over. And yet, amidst that reality, Isaiah offers God's hope of a restored future, a time when God will bring to them restoration, a time for them when God will offer indeed restoration and the promised land, a time when the valleys will be lifted up and the hills made low, a time when the uneven ground will be made flat and the rough places a plain, a time when the glory of the Lord would be revealed. It's almost akin to the changing of the seasons, isn't it? And we kind of feel that in the air today as the temperatures get cooler and the rains are returning more and more. We know indeed that so much of the suffering, the pain, indeed is temporary, isn't it? Isaiah talks about the grass withering, the flowers fading, yet the word of the Lord is forever. God's goodness will one day triumph. Peace will one day be restored. Indeed, God will wipe away every tear from our eyes. And I think this is, amidst the suffering and pain dilemma, one of the real things that we need to acknowledge. As Christians, we need to acknowledge that one day God's justice will be complete. One day God's love will reign. One day the captive will come home. This is the message that was given to the captives of old, and this is the message that's given to you and I who live as captives with our suffering and our pain today. This is the kind of hope that Jesus spoke about when he talked about a lost son, and that after everything had gone down, that loving father would be at the end of the driveway, waiting with open arms to receive that prodigal son home, who would kill the fatted calf and throw a great party, because indeed my son who was lost is now home again. This is the same kind of hope that was found in that relentless shepherd, when even though she had 99 of her sheep safe in the pen, would not give up until that last sheep was found and brought back safely home. This is the image of the restored kingdom. In the book of Revelations, you have to wait 65 books until you get to the end of the Bible. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. One day, freedom. One day, restoration. One day, the pains and the suffering will be no more. One day. I think this is why the image of Jesus as being a Passover lamb has stood the test of time and continues to speak to us today. That one who is sacrificed, the lamb, that one who endures the suffering and the pain, one day indeed, in his way, glory, restoration, shalom, peace will be known. Last week we spoke a little bit about William Blake's poetry, and we read a stanza from one of his poems called The Tiger. This morning I wanted to read from another one of Blake's poems called The Lamb. Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? Gave thee life and bid thee feed by the stream and o'er the mead. Gave thee clothing of delight, softest clothing, woolly, bright. Gave thee such a tender voice, making all the vales rejoice. Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? Little lamb, I'll tell thee. Little lamb, I'll tell thee. He is called by thy name, for he calls himself a lamb. He is meek and he is mild. He became a little child. I a child and thou a lamb. We are called by his name. Little lamb, God bless thee. Little lamb, God bless thee. You know, I think one of the biggest challenges we consider the good news that's contained in Isaiah's message, the good news that we find in our Christian story about hope in the future, that restoration time, is that we're quite impatient when it comes to God's timing, aren't we? Those are such wonderful words of God's restoration, yet it is so hard to live amidst the suffering and the pain in the day-to-day. I think it's interesting and important for us to remember that there were two understandings of time back in the days of Jesus and the early Greeks and earlier. We only have one, yet they had two. There was and is the understanding of chronos, like our chronometer, our watches that some of us wear on our wrists, that quantitative nature of time that we live in that is temporary. But there was a second understanding of time back then. There was a time they called Kairos time. It was a proper or opportune time. It was a qualitative time. It was a time that was not temporary, but a time that was permanent. In the scriptures, when they talked about Jesus' birth, they talked about that birth as being Kairos time. In Mark, it talks about Jesus' birth as being the appointed and opportune time for the purpose of God. When Jesus came. To read through the New Testament, we read 86 different occasions that the way Jesus' coming, the way Jesus' ministry was Kairos time. So we live in time of joy, pain. We live in a time of happiness, sorrow. But we live knowing that we are not alone. We live knowing that God walks with us. We live knowing that indeed there is hope now and indeed hope and restoration fully in the future. So perhaps we might end as we started this morning. Perhaps these words might have even more depth for us. Shoyin Shiku is an elder in the community. He was walking by a home and he heard much crying there. Master had died. He entered the home and was invited to sit. He sat among the mourners and he cried. They were curious. Why is it that you cry? Surely you are beyond such things. He gently answered them, saying, "It is this which allows me to be beyond such things." Amen.